Across Australia, you're with Tony Delroy on Nightlife.
Tonight, we're going to take a look at the world of franchising. If you think about chain stores, which seem to pop up just about wherever you go across the country, whether they be fast food, child services, leisure, there's a fair chance they're operated as a franchise. But exactly what is franchising and what are the benefits and pitfalls of those who get involved? Tonight we're going to have a look at this through the eyes of our small business consultant, Matthew Dickerson, who's in studio tonight. Great to see you.
Hey, good evening, Tony. How are you going? Good to be in the studio.
Yes, that's a nice change.
Yeah.
Also joined tonight by Carolyn Dufton from Franchising Plus, an expert in franchising and author of the book The F World: Franchising, the Best, the Worst and the Scary. Carolyn, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, to start. Carolyn, I'll ask you, what's franchising?
Well, franchising is, in Australia, a regulated industry.
Yep.
It's important to say that. Lots of people
think... Who regulates it?
The ACCC.
Okay.
So it's important to know that you can't decide whether you are going to call yourself a franchise if you are actually behaving like a franchise and you try to call yourself a license. So, unfortunately, you don't have that choice.
Mm-hmm.
A franchise exists if there's an agreement between the parties.
Yep.
If there's a grant by the franchisor to the franchisee, if money is changing hands, and if there is a substantial association with a trademark.
Okay. Now let's start with the two basics, the franchisor and the franchisee.
Mm.
What's what?
The franchisor is the person who's basically created a system.
So has the idea.
And a brand, yes. Mm. And then sells or licenses, we'll say that it licenses, it's actually franchises, the rights to use that brand and system to the franchisee.
Now, I suppose if we're thinking about this, let's take the Scottish hamburger chain.
Mm-hmm.
So they have head office in Atlanta or wherever,
yes.
And all of their hamburger chain across the world.
Yes.
And a lot of these are run by individual local business people who just
yes.
take on the international method.
Yes. They take on the master. What happens generally with the larger companies is, the international companies, is that a master franchise is sold to a specific region, and then the master franchisee then sells franchises within that region.
Mm. Let's just take a moment to have a look more at the franchisor. I mean, Carolyn, what's in it for a business owner to look at selling a franchise or another operation to somebody else? What do they get out of it?
Well, it really is a very cost-effective and efficient way of growing a business. For a franchisor, the best part of franchising, as I see it, is basically the level of control that a franchisor can have over the brand. Because obviously, if you're expanding your brand, the main thing is you don't want your brand to be tarnished in any way.
Yeah.
And
keeping
franchising,
quality control, I guess, is one of the big things.
Absolutely, yes. And franchising, the franchise agreement, is the ultimate in control. There's no other business method that really offers the complete clarity and degree of control that a franchise agreement does.
Yeah. Matthew, how does the franchisor make a profit out of this whole arrangement?
Well, there's a number of different models, Tony, that you can use to make some money. But and as Carolyn said, just going further on that point, it's a great way for a brand to expand.
Yep.
And it's a great way not to put so much capital into the expansion process and to share the risk as well as sharing the reward. There are some franchises as well that will take a specific product they may have and say, we want to take this product out to a number of markets. How's the best way for us to get it out there? Rather than put a lot of capital into it themselves, they'll expand that throughout their chain of franchisees. The franchisor will normally take a small percentage of the overall turnover for a business. So brand X is in a retail outlet or in a mm-hmm. in a shopping mall selling their products happily, and they've got to feed their figures back through to the franchisor. So they're paying a royalty, I suppose, is the best way to describe it. So they're providing the ongoing brand development, the ongoing marketing, making sure the systems are in place. And that's where the most successful franchises that I've seen are really killing it, is in the great systems they have in place. And they've got to be able to innovate and change. And take the Scottish hamburger chain that you mentioned earlier. If you look at that particular chain, they're not selling hamburgers. They're not really selling fast food. They're selling convenience because they're now changing into healthy food. So that would have been driven by the franchisor to make the franchisees still profitable. So they make their money out of a small royalty stream.
I suppose most of us also come into the equation by, you know, seeing at the local shopping centre a bakery, for example, you know, X brand bakery, which is, perhaps through the state or through the country. And, how much does the person who sets the business up put into that individual store? I mean, obviously signage would be part of it, but the equipment as well.
Well, there's different startup costs from a financial perspective.
Yep.
You might have some businesses that might be as low as, say, $50,000 to get into them. Some of the motel chains might be $10 or $15 million to get into them. So there's a significant difference there. But then the prescription, if you like, the formula is such that they really have to set it up in a certain way. But where the individual store owner can make a difference is how they deliver that product. So the signage might be the same, the point of sale system might be the same, the setup might be the same, but the way they deliver that to their customers is where they can really make a difference, and where some franchisees are very successful and some aren't is in that final delivery.
Mm. Is there a risk, Carolyn, of the franchisee might give the business a bad name by failing to live up to the standard set by the original business?
Yes, absolutely. And Matthew raises a very good point there, that the system is there for the franchisee to follow, and it's basically for the good of all. The franchisor has developed that system through experience and often costly mistakes, and the idea is that the franchisee can avoid making those sorts of mistakes that they made originally by following the system. You generally find that when things go wrong, the franchisee has decided that they know better, and that actually the system really isn't the best thing to follow, and that they're going to try something a little different.
Yeah.
And that's often where things go pear-shaped.
Sometimes what seems to be a good idea in one country doesn't work so well in another. Mm. For example, I believe that a couple of the fast food chains had difficulty when operating in France because there is an expectation that alcohol is going to be available in most French outlets. And when it wasn't, they found that people were reluctant to go in because, you know, that wasn't available, but it wasn't part of the overall international philosophy.
Yes.
So sometimes, national problems come.
Yes. And I do believe that, you know, a franchisor shouldn't be actually using the franchisee as a guinea pig. I believe that if a franchisor is going to roll out a business and have any credibility in that business, that it should already have been piloted and tested. And it's very common for businesses to try and take their proven system in one country to another and for it to fail. So really it has to be adequately piloted in the country, I believe, before it is then franchised in that country by a responsible franchisor.
And that's an interesting point, Tony. Australia is the most franchised country in the world.
Is that right?
Per capita. So obviously someone like the US would have a lot more franchisees, but per capita. But 92% of our franchises in Australia were developed in Australia. So they've probably taken their systems and models and built them within Australia rather than just dropping in an imported model from overseas.
Yeah.
So it's an important point you raise. Yeah.
Obviously, Matthew, we've got a situation where some are very elaborate. For example, the fast food chains, where to establish a store, I'd imagine, would be very expensive. But there's other much simpler ideas. For example, the mowing idea that has been seems to be almost in every suburb, every town.
Yeah.
That's a relatively simple idea which seems to have got a lot of traction.
Yeah, and that one's probably more around a marketing asset rather than a systemised approach. Something like the hamburger chain is so systemised, the light goes off, or the bell goes ding and you take the French fries out, whereas the mowing, and now that's moved into handyman services and a whole range of other services. And I think what that's about is just giving some credibility and some marketing punch to someone looking for someone who, those sort of services, there's not a lot of people out there who want to do those. So if they can find someone, and it's nice and easy, they know the name straight away, they can pick up the phone and ring and have some confidence. It's hard talking without brand names, isn't it, Tony?
Of course, absolutely. Matthew, you might run a very successful business, but what makes it right to franchise? You know, you might say, okay, I've got a wonderful cake shop, everybody in the suburb loves us, but does that necessarily mean it's going to work in Melbourne or Adelaide or Perth or Bathurst.
Yeah, and these are the big decisions when a franchisor, some franchisors have said, I've got a great business, I'll go and franchise it. But there's significant cost in actually getting the documentation, the legal processes in place, because it is a regulated industry in Australia, which is good because you are protected as a franchisee. So just because you've got one successful business, the couple of things that you look at is, A, have you got systems in place that can be replicated easily? And B, is it something that isn't available in other places? So as an example, there's a juice place whose name we won't mention that has been very successful. Other places said, oh, we'll do the same thing. And you see them pop up in shopping malls and then close down in shopping malls because they were there first, and other ones coming into the market are coming in afterwards. And the market's already saturated. They only need one of those juice places in a shopping mall. So you might have a great little business in your suburb, but then picking that up and taking it elsewhere, you want to make sure there's no competitors and your system is different.
Matthew, what responsibility does both in the side of the equation have? Obviously, if you're a franchisor, you've got to have a reasonable idea and ways of implementing it. But the franchisee, what responsibilities do you have back to the home-based business to make sure that you're doing the right thing by them?
Yeah, look, there's certainly some legal obligations, but as Carolyn said, the point Carolyn raised was spot on. Some people say, oh, look, I know they say to do A, B, and C in this franchise agreement that I've signed, but look, I know better than that. I'll go on. It's a bit like baking a cake, I suppose.
Yeah.
You look at the cake mixture, eggs, don't worry about it, eggs in this one. Self-raising flour, forget about that. And then you pull the cake out of the oven and you say, well, I've got some clag glue, essentially. So you need to really follow those if you want it to be successful. And most franchisors that I've ever dealt with want their franchisees to be successful, A, from a financial perspective, B, from their brand name. So if a franchisee isn't following the line or a franchisee is struggling, the franchisor wants to be there to help them out. So, yeah, there really are some obligations on the franchisee to make sure they follow their legal obligations and try and run the business in the way they've been told.
Yeah. Carolyn, I guess one of the issues here sometimes is the rent that is demanded by shopping centres in particular. If they know a chain is moving in, all of a sudden I'd imagine the eyes light up and think, ka-ching, we're in the money here. And, getting a good deal if you were a franchisee rather than just a Joe Blow newsagent might be a bit of a difficult one.
Yes, well, I think the shopping centres have got massive responsibilities, and it saddens me to see so many closing down outlets all the time in the shopping centres. The fit-out costs are absolutely huge in the shopping centres, and unfortunately, franchising can add to a retailer's problems here, because quite often a franchisor will change their brand every 5 to 7 years is quite common. Now, you can imagine if you've come in as a new franchisee a year before a rebrand and not having any knowledge of that rebrand, you've spent maybe $350,000, $400,000 on fit out. And the next year, the franchisor announces that they're now going to change all their colours and that you have to completely refit your shop and you're up for a complete refit. Well, that in itself can just send a franchisee just to the gurgler. So shopping centres scare the life out of me with franchises. You have to know that you have an extremely healthy turnover and an extremely healthy bottom line.
There's actually a big story in the Financial Review tomorrow about concerns about some prospectuses for some businesses that are about to be launched onto the stock market over the next month. They say a third of them definitely overstate the situation. Mm-hmm. And I suppose a lot of people have seen it with, for example, the tunnels that have been privately built in Australia. Yeah. You know, they've always said, oh, we'll have 200,000 cars through a day. Mm. And in the end, it's 35,000, not the 200,000. Mm. Sometimes do you get, the franchisor over-egging the product?
Well, I insist on franchisors undertaking a franchising feasibility study. We won't develop any new system without a feasibility being done. And a feasibility examines all the financial aspects of it. We are extremely cautious and realistic in our projections. And frighteningly, we do have franchisors coming who think they've got a franchisable business. And we actually discover that they're not actually profitable, which is a slight problem. If they're not profitable, then their franchisees have no chance of being profitable after they've paid all their fees to the franchisor.
At times, I guess the franchisee would almost become like slave labour because they're providing money to head office but probably earning very little themselves.
Yes, that's right. And Look, some franchisees just want to be an owner-operator. They are a technician. As Matthew said, the fact that they have marketing systems in place and a lot of the big franchises is very appealing. They really just want to go out and mow the lawns. They don't want to be running a business per se. They're earning an hourly rate, which to me is really not running a business. They're just working for wages. For some franchisees, that's attractive, but for other franchisees that go buy a franchise actually believing that they're going to be able to run a profitable business, sometimes they are sadly disappointed, and that's very, very disturbing for the industry.
Matthew, can you talk through the disadvantages of being a franchisee as opposed to just an ordinary small business person?
Well, one, I don't actually know the answer to this one, Tony. One thing that certainly, when I was thinking about this topic, was a highlight for me in terms of a risk was, you're a franchisee, you're running a good business, things are going well, and the franchisor goes broke. Now, but Carolyn might be able to answer that question, but I don't actually know what happened in that situation.
Well, in actual fact, this has happened with the coffee chain, didn't it, recently?
It's happened with a lot of businesses recently.
Because the coffee chain actually went bust, and there were probably a lot of profitable stores out there using the system. And yet, obviously, a huge drain because there were some that weren't working. Yeah.
And the problem is that in that situation, the franchisees actually have no right to the intellectual property. So they cannot, even though the brand has gone under, they can't actually continue trading under that brand.
I wonder if that's the small print everybody reads.
And that's a significant risk. I say one of the risks I thought of, because you build up a brand in your local market based on the fact that you're part of this great big marketing machine and you've got all these systems in place. Head office goes broke and suddenly you've got to change your name. So you used to be ABC Coffee, now you've got to be DEF Coffee, which is then different, and you've got to build up that brand again. You may be able to continue running it because you've got those systems in place. Yeah. But the other risks, I think, Tony, and Carolyn touched on it, you have got some additional costs. To run your business, you've got some additional costs. 27% of franchises in Australia are in retail. So a lot of those businesses, and if you walk through a shopping mall, it's hard to find a non-retail business in there. Even I was in Brisbane Airport earlier on today, and I walked through the airport looking for non-franchise businesses, and I struggled to find any. So you have got some additional overhead costs. You've got that high rent you talked about. You've got some going back to head office, and then you've still got to try and get a profit and be able to grow your business. So one of the risks I see is you are limiting your flexibility. The thing that gives you an advantage is also a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You've got an advantage in having safety systems in place, a proven system, but then if you think you can grow the business more than that, you really shouldn't go outside that model. So it's a protection, but also can inhibit your growth.
Got to say, I was in the United States in the early 80s, Carolyn, and I saw a cookie business, and I tasted some of the product, and I thought, oh, gee, this is really nice, and there's nothing like it back home. It eventually, and I thought, well, that would be a really good business. It eventually did come to Australia and pretty much failed.
Mm.
But it's one of those things where, you know, something that works in the American market doesn't necessarily translate to Australia.
Well, let's face it, the Americans just love their cookies, don't they? you go and check in at a hotel and there you are, you know, would you like a cookie with that? And that's just a typical point that we were talking about earlier about testing the market. You know, yes, Australians do like their cookies, but certainly not nearly to the extent that the Americans do.
Yeah. What's your advice for anyone considering getting involved in franchising? Are there experts to consult beforehand? And I guess a very good accountant and a very good lawyer would be helpful.
Absolutely. It's very important, though, when you go to a franchising, to a lawyer or an accountant, that they are not biased against franchising, because this is my soapbox now, actually, Tony.
Just get up there. Let's have a look.
Yeah, I'm going to get up there, because this needs to be said, that there are many good franchises out there. And unfortunately, many lawyers and accountants do have a bias against franchising. Now, in my opinion, they should be giving objective professional advice, not touting their personal bias against franchising. They should be appraising and evaluating the franchise on its own merit. So I always suggest that people go to lawyers and accountants with franchising experience, and also go to a franchising consultant, because a consultant looks at the whole picture, the operational side, the system, the territory, areas that lawyers and accountants aren't experienced in. So really they need to see all three advisors.
And it is, it's important to the Australian market, Tony. You've got $131 billion in sales from franchising and 407,000 people employed in franchising.
Wow.
So it's not something, as Caroline said, you don't want someone who just dismisses franchising and says that's not very good. Mm. They're important numbers for our market.
Yeah. It is one of those awkward situations, isn't it, with a business. There's so many things that can go wrong. Quality control, I mentioned in passing a little bit earlier. But it is one of those things where the worst thing is, you know, not having everybody consistent across the board. So, in other words, if you walk in at 9 o'clock at night and ask for a burger, or walk in at 2:30 in the afternoon, are you going to get two different products?
Yeah,
and you know, just that consistency that's required.
Yeah, that's right, and that's where I say the best franchises that I've seen do have those systems in place that they just replicate it. You can go into any franchise in any city and get exactly the same product, no matter who's on there. And going back to your question earlier about you've got your own good little business, one of the tests is, does that business continue to work well if the owner of that business goes away for a month? And some businesses really struggle when the owner's out of the business for an hour, let alone being away for a month. And if you've got good systems in place, it'll survive that owner going away.
Yeah. Are there really interesting, Carolyn, new ventures that are coming on the market all the time? We've talked about, you know, basic stuff that you're likely to run into at the local shopping centre, but are there innovative things that are perhaps not in the general realm of retail?
Absolutely. In fact, I really don't deal with retail franchises at all. Mm. I would say it would be harder now to find a business that couldn't be franchised and isn't being franchised at this moment in time than to actually say, okay, these businesses are being franchised.
Yeah. Things like tax accountants and things like that, you know, the service industry.
Anything you can think of. And as we know, the man's name franchises are moving into every single area of business that you can think of. Computers, home maintenance and aerials, antennas, anything, any home service that you can imagine is being franchised by that particular company. And franchising is spreading. And I'm enjoying the fact that people are thinking outside the square here and franchising all sorts of different types of businesses.
Also, there's some interesting twists on a theme, Matthew. You know, I'm aware of a department store which, you know, sublets its divisions. And so, you know, if you want to buy the lighting division or the furniture division or the soft toys division or whatever, you can. You actually don't own the business, but you own that little section of the business.
And a lot of that comes back to the credibility of the name. When you walk into that department store, Department Store X, that immediately gives some credibility, gives people some confidence. So when you go into a section of that, then the person running that, you don't really care how that business arrangement is. You don't really care about the setup. But that person running that section is really just trading off that overall name, the confidence that gives people when they come in the door for that name. And there's a lot to be said for that name.
Also, you get a situation too where if you're in a group, it's possible to market and advertise a lot more than if you're a sole business.
Yeah, and I'm going to say one brand name here, Tony. Sorry,
yeah,
I'm going to break the rules here, but 7-Eleven is the largest franchise in the world, 38,000 outlets. Now, when you think about that, that's just a little convenience store. And we've all seen convenience stores where we've grown up and we visit country towns, wherever
Aren't
it might
they
be.
Bright now?
Well, and exactly that. That particular convenience store, which is probably pretty much the same as any old convenience store, except it's got a common branding that's very easy to market. But also when you go into one of those stores, you know where the milk is because it's the same at every store. You know where the packet of chips are going to be. You know where the chocolates are. So that sort of commonality, there's a lot of strength in that. But it's also that marketing. They can market very effectively because it is everywhere across the world. Then you see that same brand.
One of the major market supermarket chains apparently is also, you know, going into some, you know, supply food on premises, and they're going to sublet that. So all sorts of options, you know, appearing within the marketplace. You know?
Yeah, and one of the things that's important, and Carolyn did touch on it very early on, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. And I think what some people do is they try and set up things that aren't quite a franchise, and therefore they don't go through the proper legal processes. And so the non-franchisee, the one that looks almost like a franchisee, hasn't got the same protection. So buying groups is one of these common ones. I see buying groups often that are set up to just be a buying group. But when you look at the details of it, it really is a franchise, but they don't call themselves a franchise, so they don't go through the whole process that a normal franchisor should go through. So that's one to really be careful of.
One of the problems, I guess, Carolyn, is also the buying power of the major groups as opposed to the single business. And, you know, if you find one of the chains move in alongside you and you're an independent, you know, it's a lot of pressure.
Yes, it is. Look, I
suppose you're happy with it, but the sole trader's not so thrilled.
No, well, I actually don't really get involved with the big boys. I'm more sort of on the small franchising side, which I enjoy enormously because they actually are the little guy next to the big guy. But it's amazing that even a small startup franchisor who starts building their own team of franchises can gain enormous market advantages through having, you know, even just 10 franchisees on board, the discounts that they and the negotiating power that they have just by having more than themselves benefits the whole group. And that's what franchising is all about, really. It's about creating that situation where the franchisee can benefit and the franchisor wins too.
Yeah, just had an SMS saying franchises are just subcontractors, glorified wage earners with no minimum wage. It's a rort for the franchisor and not fair to the franchisee. Ban it, I say.
Yes.
Big fan.
Yeah. I was waiting for these calls. I was waiting for the calls to start coming, actually. I'm not surprised. And look, my heart goes out to people that have had a hard time through franchising. And I hate to say it, but there are some very unscrupulous franchisors out there.
Yeah.
The only thing I can just keep urging is...
Do your homework.
Oh, absolutely. Do your homework. But, you know, when you go to see the advisors, listen to what they have to say. Because I have given advice many times to franchisees about a franchise, and they have almost had their fingers in their ears saying, I don't care what you say, I've decided I'm going to buy this franchise. They've fallen in love with it, with their heart, and they don't listen with their head. They are making the wrong decision in many cases, and then a year down the track, they realise what they've got into, and if only they had listened to advice, they wouldn't find themselves in that situation.
We've got our small business consultant Matthew Dickerson in studio tonight, and also Carolyn Dufton. She's authored The F World, F Franchising, The Best, The Worst and The Scary, and also is heavily involved in as a franchisor.
Franchising consultant.
Consultant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
If you would like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Perhaps you've been there, done that, and wished you hadn't. Maybe you have, devised an idea and spread the word, and perhaps you've become Australia-wide, statewide, city-wide, national, international, perhaps. Just your experience as well as, if you would like to ask a question from Matthew and Carolyn, we'd love to hear from it.
It's Nightlife.
The F-World Franchising, Carolyn Dufton in studio tonight, Matthew Dickerson also here, and we're talking about your experience. Perhaps you've worked in it, perhaps you are thinking about it as we speak. Scott, you're not convinced that all franchisees have the skills.
Oh, mate, I tell you, I studied horticulture for 5 years,
yep.
And permaculture, and you get these guys, and they give them a two-week course, and they say they're expert pruners and that sort of stuff. And I have to be called in to, well, I used to, I've retired.
So to repair the damage.
Oh, repair the damage. Like, you know, people that have these standard roses, you know, 80 of them down to the walk path, and they chop them all off with the chainsaw. So then they just get the growth off the roots, you know. It's just appalling, you know. They just don't know what they're doing, and yet they're experts after 2 weeks. And they buy these franchises, and they drove my money down to $35 per hour. And, you know, here I was running, you know, I was looking after embassies and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, I had 4 people employed and that sort of stuff. And it absolutely killed my business.
Yeah.
So it's an important one, Scott, I think, where the franchisor needs to make sure the quality of the personnel they've got working for them is of the highest level. Otherwise, they will damage their reputation, and so they've got to take notice of that training process and what they do, because it's their reputation on the line as well. So, yeah, look, it is an important thing to make sure they do have their personnel trained to the right level.
Yeah. All right, Scott, thanks so much for that. Peter, you've been a franchisee and you've been in it for 5 years?
That's correct, yes.
How's it going?
Good, thank you, good. Look, I took on the... I grabbed the opportunity to join a franchise group. I'm in the construction industry. It's, if I can name the company, GJ Gardner Homes is my franchise.
Yep.
Over 3 years ago, I brought in a business partner. I found the business was moving forward. It wasn't moving forward as quick as I envisaged, but with the right areas, myself looking after the construction side and my business partner looking after the financials and the management side and the sales, the business just thrived. In terms of support, it's been fantastic. Like the quarterly meetings that we have, as a collective, we all gather around and pass on the good, bad, and the ugly. Look, it's just very beneficial. Certainly, you have to work. Things don't drive themselves. In any case, you have to push it. I mean, you know, we do the after hours, the over and above, but certainly the rewards are there. And if you're looking for something, that's certainly...
Peter, have most of the franchisees succeeded, or has there been some falling by the wayside?
There has, and purely because of driven by not growing the business. There's been greed involved. I mean, that's like anything. If you look at the opportunities in front of you, and you pretty much overcapitalise, or look, you can bring yourself unstuck. The best thing with it is, Big Brother's watching. They monitor our financials. They monitor what we do. They point us in the right direction, and that's a benefit. You're not flying blind.
Yeah, that's great, Peter. It's really, really good to hear those stories, and I think what's coming across here is the fact that you are following the system. You can see that the franchisor is putting effort into the support, and it's really fantastic to hear those, because there are a lot of good franchises out there, and I'm really happy that it's working for you.
Peter, I'll just relay an SMS to you, which sort of counters your argument in a way, but it says, "G'day Tony, I'm a qualified tradesman and I've worked for a franchise a few times, but never again. The pay is rubbish and non-qualified bosses trying to tell you what you're doing is wrong when they have no idea themselves." Have you come across that?
Look, it's certainly the franchise or the master. He's very, very good with his, in a business sense, and that's his background through marketing and so forth. I wasn't a salesperson. I was a builder.
Yep.
I learned. I'm still learning. And it certainly is, you look to these people as a mentor and more to progression of your business. The things that they implement, the things that they bring into the business, the training, we've got constant seminars, things that go on all the time. And they're the things that you need to look for in a franchise, the ongoing training, the ongoing knowledge that you gain. Without that, you become...
And I think
Matthew, communication really important, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the things that Peter points out there, which is an excellent part of franchising, is that shared knowledge. When you talked about quarterly meetings, Pete, and you said you get around, and it's not just the franchisor imparting knowledge and information to the franchisees, but the franchisees sharing that knowledge and talking about how they approach things and how they do things. I think that's really important, and it's good to see some SMSs coming through, Tony, on the 21st birthday of the first SMS today. So good to see people on the SMSs.
Thanks for sharing, Matthew. great to hear from you, Pete. Thanks for that. Damien, you're looking to set up an overseas franchise for your business.
Yeah, that's correct, guys. My business is still effectively in startup mode. It's been established for approximately 18 months, but we're at the point now where we're being approached by overseas resellers and people wanting to set up and represent us in other countries. And it's actually quite a difficult thing to try and get my head around. And the research that I've done so far has proved fairly fruitless. And I was just wondering what you guys think, or in your experiences, if there's some sort of template or other type of method for doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear that people are so interested in your business, Damien. That's fantastic. It's very beneficial to actually really roll your business out as much as you possibly can do on home territory and home ground and test it, pilot it in different areas of Australia before moving overseas. It's been proven that people who have the most success by overseas ventures have actually got a proven system here in Australia first. So if there's any way that you can actually do that in Australia first before you start looking at overseas, I think that would really help you to iron out the sort of the difficulties on a local level before you start dealing with people overseas and different sort of business methods and
habits. Is it a problem, Damien, that you'd be competing against yourself here? Is that why you don't want to operate locally?
Yeah, exactly. It's I guess the type of business that we have, it's a B2B product, so we're quickly, I guess we've been able to get our tentacles out in the market here. And now I think the next sort of horizon for us is looking at overseas markets where, as I mentioned before, we're starting to get a lot of inquiries and interest from not only clients but resellers and other people wanting to represent us.
Mm. So not necessarily franchising, possibly licensing or distributorship type arrangements. Is that what you're thinking about?
Exactly, yeah. I guess that's the minefield I'm trying to navigate at the moment.
Mm.
Any ideas on that?
There is a government agency, actually, isn't there, Matthew? Austrade?
Yeah, there is Austrade. Yeah. But again, I think that was exactly what I was going to say, Carolyn. I think it doesn't sound necessarily like a franchising arrangement. It may well be a licensing arrangement that you're looking at there. And that may be simpler to implement rather than going down the franchising path, because as you go to each different country, they've all got their own different franchising laws. So even if you did set up as a franchisor in Australia, you can't just pick that up and drop it into any country, because each country's got their own laws.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Mm.
All right, mate. Thanks so much for that. Eddie, you wonder where the line is between franchising and a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds like franchising is really just a first layer of pyramid selling.
No, not at all.
I think he's at soapbox again.
Please to say it's not, no. A franchisor is the person at the helm who's actually created the system, and then they allow people below them to use that. There can be a couple of tiers if you have a master franchise tier below the franchisor and in between the franchisees, but it's very common in a smaller system for there just to be the franchisor and the franchisee. Royalties do change hands, but that's only right because they are actually using the franchisor's brand. And it's a very fair regulated system. There's nothing shonky about franchising. Pyramid selling is completely different. But, I'd be pleased to sort of talk to you about that if you wanted to know anything more off air sometime. Franchising is regulated. It's a safe industry.
Yeah, all right, Eddie, thanks for raising that issue. Roy the Baker says, Tony got knocked back for a loan for a start on a bakery, but got offered three times as much to buy a franchise.
I think that's it. I think banks see the safety in franchising. And I did do some research, Tony, but I couldn't actually drag this bit of data out to see how much more successful startup businesses were under a franchise model than on a standalone. Now, logic says they are more successful, but I just couldn't find any good data. Mm. But obviously, from a banking perspective, they're prepared to take more of a risk on someone to be involved in a franchise rather than a standalone. And that makes sense.
Mm. The banks do have lists of preferred franchises, so they won't necessarily lend on any franchise, but they do have long lists of the top franchises that they will definitely lend money on.
Another SMS comment says, franchise models are flawed because the franchisor takes their cut from the sales revenue regardless of whether the franchisee is making it a profit or loss.
Well, yes, that's true. They take it on the gross sales. But there again, if the franchisee is running the business as it was designed to be run, they should be making a profit. So a franchisor couldn't take it on the bottom line because the franchisee, it is a franchise. We have to remember, a franchisee is self-employed. They are running an independently owned business within a system. So a franchisor couldn't possibly take a cut on the bottom line because the franchisee might mismanage the business. There might be no profit at the bottom line.
Yeah, so a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
Everyone's got to play the game.
Yes.
Thanks so much for being there tonight. Really appreciate your comments. If you want to read more, the F World, F Franchising, The Best, The Worst, and The Scary, Carolyn Dufton's book is out and about. And thank you, Mr. Dickerson.
Thanks, Tony. Good
thanks,
to see
Tony.
You.
Matthew Dickerson also with us, our small business consultant.